And so the narrative continues. Chapter 37, verse 23. Shlishi. The third reading of Parshas Vayeshev Vayehi. Kasher bo Yosef. When Yosef actually comes. El Echov to his brothers. Vayafshitu es Yetev. They strip Yosef. Remove his clothing. Eskutontoi esksenes hapasim, his tunic, that colorful robe, asher Allah, which was upon him. So we have a description of a number of different things. What did they strip from him? So Rashi says, eskutontoi ze chaluk, this is a regular or ordinary tunic. Esksenes hapasim, the colorful robe. Hu shahisif le aviv yeser al echov. This was the special article of clothing that he wore that his brothers did not have. It was a mark of distinction. Why did they take off kutante and ksenes hapasim? Why is there a need for redundancy? Why do we have to talk about this? Well, the Tur disagrees with Rashi. He says we're not talking about two different things here. He says ultimately, kutante, his tunic, is now explained. His tunic. And what is his tunic? His tunic is ksenes hapasim. That's the colorful tunic. In other words, not that Yosef wore an additional extra article of clothing, but the same article of clothing was of a very different quality. And so they removed this. And why did they have to remove that? And why does the Torah have to tell us about it? Says Rabbi Yosef b'Chershar, mipnei shekinu bei. This was the thing that caused the jealousy. Yosef had these special raiments, and they all coveted that. And it bothered him that he was set aside, and he was treated differently. And they also knew this is very, very identifiable as Yosef's, and they were planning to kill him, or that he should at least die. And then they would have to present evidence. So the evidence would be in the form of an article of clothing that was unmistakably Yosef's. This way they could tear it and destroy it. They can bring home tatters of it. It would still be recognizable. And then, Vayikachuhu, Vayashlichu Eisoi Haboira. They took him and they violently threw him into a deep pit. Now, this pit is going to be described. The Haboir. And this pit that they threw him into, it was reik. It was empty. Ein boi moyim. There was no water in this pit. Well, if the pit was empty, obviously there was no water. There was nothing in the pit. So why do you have to say v'haboy reik? The pit was an empty ditch, an empty hole in the ground. And not only it was empty, there was no water. He just said it was empty. If it's empty, there's no water. Why the redundancy? So Rashi says that we're being told something very important here. And what Rashi is going to say now is a direct quote from a famous Gemara in Maseches Shabbos. On page Chav Beis, in the Sugi of Chanukah, it says Rashi v'haboy reikim b'mayim mi mashma shenemar v'haboy reik, from the intimation of the words and the pit was empty. Eini yedea she'im b'mayim. Don't I know that there is no water in it? Ma Talmud leimar. What is the verse coming to teach me when it says ein boy moyim? There is no water. No, avada. He said it was empty. Says Rashi, mayim ein bei. There was no water. Aval nechosh v'akravim yesh bei. Emptied of water, but filled with poisonous snakes and scorpions. In other words, since it was haboy reik, it was empty of water, but filled with snakes and scorpions, what's going to happen to Yosef? Obviously, it's going to be the end. Vayikachuhu, this pasuk that talks about throwing him into the pit says they threw him. Vayashlichu, doesn't say vayashlichai. Why is it plural? And the Medrash tells us that Shimon was the one who threw Yosef into the pit. He manhandled him. He's bigger, he's stronger, maybe caught him by surprise. Shimon threw him into the pit. So why does it say they? It says the Balaturim. It says it b'loshan rabim because he did it on their account. He was their shliach. He was their agent. It wasn't Shimon's thing. It was everybody's thing. To which, of course, you'll ask the question, But after all, our sages tell us, Ein shliach ledvar aveda, there's no such thing as a shliach. There's no such thing as an agent, an emissary. And somebody can't be given power of attorney to do an aveda. A guy will do an aveda and say, well, it's not my fault. Go and prosecute the mishaleach, the one who sent me. He told me to do it. So what do we say? Divrei Rava, divrei Talmud, be shaman. The master said something. And the student, the apprentice, said something. Who are you going to listen to? Says the Medrash Seichel Tov. This is Bidini Odom. In a human court, everybody will be held responsible for their own actions. However, Bidini Shamayim, when it comes to the heavenly court, yes, shlichus. A person did something on behalf of others, that is prosecutable. And everybody else is held guilty, even though Shimon was the one who actually threw him into the water. So the Hamik Dover has an interesting take on this business of Habay Reik. He adds a very fascinating nuance to what Rashi says. He says, Habay Reik means that there are no large boulders or sharp stones at the floor, at the bottom of this pit. Now what happens when you throw a person into a deep pit and there are sharp stones and boulders? They're going to get hurt, maybe even die. So that's the first thing. Habay Reik, this was an empty pit. Yosef was in for a soft landing. And it was Ein Bo Mayim. It was no water, which means if there be water, they could be afraid of him drowning. So why do we have to say that there was no sharp stones, there was no boulders, there was no water? What's the point? The point that the Torah is trying to make this is they did not want to be responsible for killing him directly. They wanted to cause his death. They said, we didn't do it. It's not us. Talk to the snake. We didn't do it. That's what they wanted to be able to say. It could be it's more cruel. It could be it's less cruel. This is the fact. They felt that he was deserving of death. They were convinced doing the right thing. So why do we have to do it on our hands? Cause it. It's good enough. We'll cause it to happen. You want to talk about cruel? Here you see cruel. What's the next thing they do? Vayeshvu le'achol lechem. They sat down to have lunch. They threw the brother into a pit. Sat down to have lunch. And as they're sitting down to eat lunch, Vayisu Einehem, they raise up their eyes, Vayiru, and they see, Vihine Erchas Yishmaelim. There's an Ishmaelite caravan, some nomads, or perhaps travelers, wayfarers on camels. Bo mi Gilad, they're coming from Gilad. Ugmalehem Nesim, their camels are laden with a variety of, a potpourri of aromatic things, and they're going down into Egypt. From here, they're going to get this idea. Yehuda says, why bother killing him? What profit is there? Even if we didn't do it with our own hands, let's just sell him into slavery, and that'll be a better way to go. And that's a subject for another day. I want to talk about this lunch. Who does that? Who kills their brother and then has lunch? Like, talk about cruel. That's like inhumane. How could they do this? So first of all, it says Vayeshvu Lechel. What's mean Vayeshvu? The Chizkuni says they went far away. They didn't want to hear Yosef's pitiful cries. They didn't want to hear him begging. That's cruel. They don't want to hear him crying. So they went far away. They shouldn't hear him. They'd leave him in his own misery. As long as we don't hear it, we're fine. That's good for us. Be'eliezer Akeach says, they ate, they sat down to eat. This was their feast, they were rejoicing. They said, we finally got rid of that SOB. We finally got rid of that miserable brother of ours who is endangering the future of the Jewish people. This is a mini Esav. This is like the story that our father went through, a bad son. He hoodwinked our father, just like Esav hoodwinked Yitzchak. And he is the one who's going to destroy everything. Because of him, the Jewish people will not develop. This is tough love. We did what was necessary. We saved the people. Let's eat. Are they happy? Having a simcha. The Tzred Hamar says, Vayeshvu lechem. This is the first time they could enjoy a meal in months, maybe in years. Yosef went miserable. He was always like a thorn in their eyes. He sat down to eat. And the story of Yosef and Yosef's dreams, it drove them absolutely crazy. So Amor says, from the day Yosef started sharing his dreams, lehoyala lechem orif, they had no gishmak. They couldn't enjoy a meal. They felt sick to their stomach. Finally, they say, We said we're rid of him. Ha! All his dreams. His dreams are finished. And now we can enjoy life again. A little bit of respite. We can go on and do what we have to do. Why does the Torah tell us what they ate lunch? Why is it important for us to know? For posterity, after throwing their brother into a pit, they sat down to eat lunch. The Sefarno says, the Torah also wants you to know that in their eyes, they were right. They didn't feel they were doing an evil deed. Sit down to have lunch after doing an evil deed, that's heinous. It's totally repugnant. In their eyes, they were doing the right thing. They said, this is a bad guy. He's trouble. It's a little Esav. And we have to do what's necessary. There's a Jewish people, a nascent nation that's developing. And if they develop wrong in their infancy, this can have a world of difference, terrible implications. There's no choice. And they really thought they did the right thing. And since they treated him like a roidif is a person who's coming after you to try to kill you. And it says, a roidif, a person tries to kill you, you kill him first. They said, okay. So we got rid of him. And they didn't feel guilty. They didn't feel as if they had done something wrong. There's a fascinating Rabbeinu Bechaya, quoting a Medrash. He says, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God said, Atam Machartam Achechem, Mitech Maichal Mishta. You sold your brother, and you had a party. You were eating. You had lunch. He says, Harei Benechem Nimkarim, your children will be sold, Mitech Maichal Mishta, out of a meal. What is this? This is what's written in the first chapter of Megillat Esther, B'shnas Shalish L'molchay, Asa Mishta. It was the third year of his reign, and Achashverosh, the party animal of the Middle East, he made a ball to end all events. Haman ba, Haman came, and how did Haman take them eventually? He captures everybody's by his charisma. He captures Achashverosh, but he does this all mitoch Michael u'mashke, at a ball, at a party, when they were having lunch. So there's a sweep of history here. It starts off with the brothers throwing Yosef and then having lunch. Hashem says, lunch you have? I'll give you lunch. And this is how the story of Purim, which was the threatened genocide of all of Am Yisrael, Hoyalisir, this all came about also in the meal, at a ball, at a party, at lunch. And it's very chilling to note that at Wannasee, Hitler, Yimach Shemay, and his henchmen, who sat down and they hatched the plans for the final solution, and they ratified it, was at a lunch. They had a hearty lunch, and then after lunch, they decided the fate of millions of Jews. And they figured out, exactly, this is how we're going to kill the Jewish people. So that's the story of lunch, a terrible lunch that never should have been, an awful situation in which Yosef's brothers sold him into slavery. But first, before selling him into slavery, they actually tried to kill him. Now let's talk about this pit. You know, there's some of the nomads in the desert, they claim they know where this pit is. I forget the name in Arabic. There's a name for a pit in Arabic, something of Yosef. And they built a little cupola over it. And I don't know if it's the Druze or the Muslims, but the nomads go there to pray. They call it Yosef's pit. They believe they know where this pit is. They call it. And interestingly, in Paskim it says, if somebody were to know that he's from Shevet Yosef, when he would see that pit, he would have a responsibility to make a bracha, because when a miracle happens to you, or a miracle happens to your ancestors, when you come to that place, you actually have to make a bracha. Baruch she'asa li nes, or asa la'aviseinu nes, or makim hazeh. So let's talk about this pit. This pit is symbolic of many things. Take a look on page Kuf Tzadik, Simen Tezayin. The Rebbe here quotes a Bereishis Rabbe, a Medrash. Boy Reik, an empty pit. Medrash Rabbe says, this is euphemistically speaking about our father Jacob. Nisroikein Boy Reish Shel Yaakov. The well of Jacob was emptied. What does this mean? Ein bei mayim, there was no longer any water. Ein bei divrei teira, there was no more words of teira, shenim shelu lamayim, that are metaphorized as water. The Rebbe comments on this medrash. Kavonas divrei medrashi, The intention, the intimation of this teaching is Shehauvda, Shebnei Yaakov, that the occurrence, the event, the narrative of the children of Yaakov, who are called Boro Shel Yaakov, that's the well of Yaakov, Rotzu Laharig Es Acheihem, they wished to kill their brother. And where did it come from? How is it that the well of Yaakov wanted to do something so bad? The children are here referred to in a parable as a well. And what happened? The well was emptied of words of Torah. So because the well was emptied of Torah, or the children of Yaakov were emptied of Torah, and the Torah was no longer influencing them, that's how they were able to throw their brother into this well, this empty pit.
I thought it was the Torah that influenced them the wrong way. They abused the
Torah. Excellent question mark. That's exactly what the Rebbe asks. The Sepharno does, after all, explain that they killed the children. They tried to kill Yosef with justification. We just read it a moment ago. The Sepharno says that's why they had lunch. Oh, that's what the Torah tells us they had lunch. Because they had absolutely no compunction and no guilt. They felt they did the right thing. And how did they come to a conclusion that killing your brother or causing your brother's death, really directly, was the right thing? How did they come to that conclusion? They erroneously interpreted and applied the laws of Torah, but wrongly. Reb Chaim says a similar thing. So the whole thing was mevusas. It was based on rules of Torah, on logic of Torah, at least l'shitasam, because they thought that Yosef was a misnakel, a misnakesh benafshom lahamisam, as the expression goes, that Yosef was plotting against them. Yosef was trying to bring about their downfall. He was trying to harm them. They had no choice. And therefore, the halacha applies, habola hargecha, hashkeim laharogai, somebody comes to kill you, kill him first. That's what the Sepharno says, as mentioned earlier. Ma'wei fe peshet vara medesh, how do you explain the medesh? That there was divrei teira nimshul amayim, the words of teira are like water, it's hydration. And the bur, the well of Yaakov, the children of Yaakov were empty, they had no hydration. And because the tiny Jewish nation was missing hydration, this is why they were able to do something like that. What do you mean? It was the Torah they used. The Eshleimar suggests a fascinating and brilliant resolution to this seeming problem. Perhaps we're not reading the Medrash right. Ein kavanas ha-medrash shalei hoise behem Torah klal. The Medrash is not saying that they were emptied of Torah altogether. What was missing in the Torah? They had Torah. But what was missing in the Torah was the mayim, the hydration element of Torah. In other words, there are elements in Torah. Torah is metaphorized as a variety of different substances, including wine and including oil. They were missing the water of Torah. What does that mean? HaTorah nimshalo dvarim shenim. The Torah, at times, is metaphorized and compared to water. Sometimes the parable invoked is wine, shemen, yayin, sometimes shemen, sometimes teir is lechem, sometimes teir is food. Teir oska b'sech me'ay, talk about the lechem, the bread of teir. V'chol echad mehem mitar chelek echad v'tchuna acheres b'teir. The Rebbe says, so what is teir? Make up your mind. Is it water? Is it oil? Is it wine? Is it bread? The answer is the teir has many elements. An element of water, an element of wine, an element of oil, an element of bread, etc. So water is indicative of a certain element, a certain dimension within Torah. B'nigei l'mayim, with regard to water and what it represents. There's a Gemara in Maseches Tainus on page 7. And the Gemara asks the rhetorical question. Lama nimshalu divrei teira l'mayim. Why are the words of Torah metaphorized as water? And the Gemara answers, Loimar lecha, to tell you, Ma mayim, manichim mekoyim gavoya, v'hoilchim lemekoyim namoch, just as it is that the nature of water is it flows from high places. The glaciers melt, the rivers are thusly seeded, and then everything flows downward from there. That's the nature of water. There are no water ups, there are only water falls. Water is always falling. Water is always going down. That's the nature of water. And because that's the nature of water, after the Tater, so it is the words of Tater. Tater is always falling. Falling means Ein divrei Torah miskayimim ela b'mi shadayte shfela. The words of Torah will only have lasting impact, will only be truly retained with somebody who has a sense of humility about him. V'nimtza shahamayim mevatim es hashiflus. The water represents the humility, the lowliness, if you will, but in a positive way. By his batlos, the self-abnegation, hanidrashim mea odom, which is expected of a person, be'es limud ha-Torah. When you study Torah. So when I study Torah, if I sit down and say, well, I know A, B, C, and D, and that's the truth, and I know that's the truth, and these are my ideas. Now let me see what the Torah has to say. And then I'll size up the Torah and say, well, I'm going to do some critical thinking. I don't think the Torah is right about this. I think the Torah is making a big mistake, in fact. You're not studying Torah. You have no success in studying Torah. The first thing you need to do, if you plan to study Torah for real, is put yourself aside. I don't know anything. What makes sense to me is irrelevant. The question is, what is Hashem's Torah saying? And only when I have the attitude of subservience and humility to Torah can a person actually grasp the profundity, the depth, and the truth, and the integrity of the Torah's message. Zuhi. This then is Kavanas Divrei HaMedrash. This is the meaning of that teaching of our sages. Boido Yishal Yainkev, the well of Jacob or the Shvatim. Eim Bahem Divrei Teira Shanim Shlu Lamoyim. They had Torah, but they didn't have hydration. They had wisdom, but not the waters. Why? Hashvatim Lamdu Teira. Yes, they learned Teira. Ubisesu Es Maasehem Al Dini HaTeira. They even built their actions on the basis of their Torah knowledge and Torah conclusions. This nefarious deed was predicated on their faulty understanding of Torah law. Avalufi erech ma'alosam, but by virtue of who they were, and perhaps not just who they were, because it's who they were, it's who they could have been, who they should have been. These are the Shvatim, Shivtei Ka. It's the foundation of the Jewish people. These are Yaakov Avinu's children. For on their level, there was one thing they were missing, and that was shiflus. And that was a sense of humility, holding yourself low. His batlos, a sense of inner nullity. It was precisely this demerit that caused them to err so drastically. Lekivnu el ha'emes. They did not have the proper focus. They were not able to find their mark. B'yis nagusam klapi Yosef, in the way that they handled their brother, Yosef HaTzadik. And one more little teaching. On Bay Reikim B'mayim, if you turn the page. Now based directly on the waters, the waters of Rashi. Mayim Embay, there was no water, but there was something there. Snakes and scorpions. The Rebbe asked a simple question. If there were snakes and scorpions, don't you think the Torah should have told us there were snakes and scorpions? Why do we have to infer that? Torah uses the same extra words. Haboy reik ein b'mayim. The pit was empty, there's no water. Why don't you just say, ubehaboyer nechashim v'akravim. Same amount of letters, same amount of words. Why do you have to scratch your left ear with your right hand all the time? Why can't the Torah just be straight with us? If you want to say something, say it for heaven's sake. It's not really such a question because there's multitude of messages that are being conveyed, including like on a level of pshat, like the Hamak Dover says, they don't want to kill him with their own hands. But it's a rhetorical question. So the Rebbe says that from the perspective of Chassidus, we should be able to understand this. From a mystical and spiritual teaching perspective, the words of the Medrash that we just learned, that ein bei mayim means ein bei divrei Torah shenim shlu l'mayim. That when we say there's no water, we talk about spiritual hydration. We're talking about the concept of Torah. So this means then, l'chein ein tzarich lichtev b'mufurish shahayu b'ber nechashim v'akravim. You don't have to write that there are snakes and scorpions. Mishum shemi sheim b'moyim. A person who has no Torah or no humility of Torah is b'derech memela. Is the most natural thing that there will be nechashim v'akravim. What is nechashim v'akravim? It's a metaphor. It's a metaphor for that which opposes life. Hydration is the source of life. Nechashim v'akravim are poisonous toxins, things which can bite and harm and kill, drain a person of life. Like the Pidush of the Baal Shem Tov on the words, v'sartem v'avadetem. V'sartem v'avadetem means that when a person turns away, he turns away and he worships idols. We say it in Hashma every day. V'sartem v'avadetem alehim acherim. Said the Baal Shem Tov, the moment you turn yourself away from Hashem, v'sartem, already is v'avadetem. Already you're serving an idol. There's no such thing as pariv. I'm indifferent. If people are being killed and you're indifferent, then you're complicit. As Martin Luther King once said, we will not remember the words of our enemies. We'll remember the silence of our friends. What's going on over here? Is this murder in the streets? Can't be bothered. Sorry. We don't believe in war. We make love, not war. We're very peaceful people. How peaceful are you when people are being killed in the street? This is a foreign policy. The whole Western world is insane. They criticize Israel for every single detail, every little thing. And hundreds of thousands of people being murdered in Syria. Nobody gives a hoot. This is morality. It's depravity. Moral depravity. Twisted. Horrible attitude. But this is what happens. If there's no Torah, if there isn't what's right, automatically you're doing what's wrong. And see, that's the way this is in this world. We walk like a tightrope. There's no such thing as being in a safe space. I'm doing neither. I'm not doing anything good. I'm not doing anything bad. My dear friend, life in its nature is that if you're not doing the right thing, you're invariably doing the wrong thing. There's no such thing as, well, I just believe in being good. What does that mean? And that's what the Torah wants you to know. Mikan yesh lilmed alei lo adam lachshev, a person will think, so I don't learn Torah. So I'm not religious. I don't have a relationship with God. So what? I'm not doing anything bad. I'm not doing anything good. I'm not a finer mensch. I'm not a nice person. I believe in goodness. I was at a shavuos yesterday. And this daughter tells me, we're not religious at all. So we don't believe. The religion is very bad, she tells me. It's a very bad religion. And it just causes all wars. I said, are your boys going to have a bar mitzvah? Oh, yeah. It was very important to my dad. We had a bar mitzvah. But we don't believe in religion. It's very bad. We just believe in being good. So just good, and just love, and just nice to everybody. I wanted to cry. I said, yeah, just good and nice. I know exactly where that ends up. You see where it ends up. What's happening in the world today from people who are just good and nice. You know, just you know, go along to get along. You know, this is the biggest disaster. And a person should not make that mistake. Think, I'm not doing the right thing. I'm not, no holy fervor, but also, you know, no. Just don't mind your own business. In a davrikach. There's no Torah. So, b'shayich b'derech b'meil tzad ha'sheni. If you're not on the side of Torah, automatically, you're on the other side, you're on the dark side. And that's what the Torah wants to tell us about Berdek and Maya. The Torah didn't want to spell it out. Because if the Torah spelled it out, we would know the story of Yosef in its minuscule details. We wouldn't have a lesson for life. Here, the Torah conveyed to us about snakes and scorpions, but perhaps more importantly, the Torah gave us a perspective, an attitude, the way we should look at the life that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us and how we should utilize it properly. Chaim. The Eibshter should give us koyach to always do the right thing. Always have hydration for our Jewish nation.